That's When I Find You, the name of the song. Sierra, the name of the group. 14 minutes after the hour, it's a Monday morning here along the Broken Road. We are Broken Road Radio. My name is Jim Park, and let me introduce you to the group here. That's David Allen Punt sitting tall at the news desk there. Eyes bright and clear, but you are looking a little older today, David. Yeah, David had a birthday Saturday, so we'll rub that in today. Dr. Don Clark joins us. Don is in Garden Valley, Texas. Don is our resident biochemist. In fact, the only scientist we have on staff here at the radio station, and a member of the board of Creation Moments. And also joining us today is, and I have to be really careful with this word. I stumble over it. He's a microscopist.
Perfect.
All right, not bad. And a scientist. His name is Mark Armitage. Mark joined us in August of 2013 to talk about this, but we want to catch everybody up on what's been happening since. This is kind of a momentous find, I think, here. And Mark, you work in Southern California. You were up in the Hell's Creek Formation in Montana. Now, what is the Hell's Creek Formation?
Well, the Hell Creek Formation is one of the largest dinosaur repositories or fossil beds on the planet, certainly in the country. It covers four or five states. It goes up into Canada, and many, many dinosaur finds, including many soft tissue finds, have been pulled out of the Hell Creek Formation. So it's a well-known, well-characterized fossil deposit that is really well-characterized in the literature.
Okay, so you went up there and you had a small group of people, and you're digging around, and tell us about what you found.
Yes, we did go up in 2012, I believe it was. Now I don't have a brain anymore.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Oh boy! And we dug for 3 days and found nothing. We of course were looking for long bones, which is where the most significant soft tissue finds in dinosaur.
Now, I have to ask, were you looking specifically for soft tissue at that point?
Yeah, we wanted to duplicate the work that we'd read in the literature, particularly the work of Dr. Mary Schweitzer. Mm. And like I say, most of the soft tissue finds came from long bones. And so we searched and searched for 3 days for femurs, long bones, anything that might be highly covered in bone mineral that would give a higher likelihood of producing a soft tissue, because it would have been encapsulated. And that was the thinking at the time, that these soft tissues, the vessels and the bone cells and such that Dr. Schweitzer had found, were encapsulated in these large femurs. And so we, thinking along the lines of the literature, thought, well, that's what we need to go look for. And so we were dejected because by the middle of the third day, we hadn't found anything, and we had to drive back to Los Angeles the next day. But the owner of the dig took us to a place where she thought a Triceratops horn was sticking out of the side of a cliff. And of course, we went there and we dug. And of course, when you dig on a dinosaur dig, you got to take it really slow, because these bones are very brittle. I mean, they've been in the ground a long time.
Now, so these are bones, not fossils, correct?
Well, particularly in the Hell Creek Formation, there are a lot of unfossilized bones. Now, and what we found was this 40-plus inch, I think it's 48-inch long Triceratops horn that was at an angle going into the cliff and down, where only the base part of the base of the horn was sticking out of the cliff. And so we had to carefully dig down, and we found large crystalline rock as overburden laying on top of most of the horn. But about the last third of the horn was actually in the soil, less than a foot or so from the surface of the ground in Montana, which has a very severe freeze-thaw cycle. Mm-hmm. And plenty of organisms in the ground, microbes and fungi and insects, and we actually did a DNA analysis, what we call a blast analysis, recently. We found the DNA of some 35-40 different organisms associated with the horn. So, but the horn, because the horn was highly vascular, it had all these blood vessels going into it, and because it was inverted, everything was crawling into those vessels, all the water, all the mud, all the insects, all the microbes. And so we found that the horn was selectively permineralized. Only the vessels themselves were hardened into stone, but the rest of the horn, all the bone mineral, was not. And so the procedure is to take these bones and to soak them in a weak acid. And the reason you do that is to take away all the bone mineral, all the magnesium and calcium and phosphorus, all the mineral that encapsulates the bone. You dissolve all that away, and if any soft tissues are there, that's what's left in your dish after you do this dissolution in EDTA, we call it. And so we found this horn. It was very friable, which the term means it was falling apart easily. There were roots. I was really disappointed when we initially examined it because there were roots growing through it, and it broke into several large pieces. So I thought, wow, you know, the chances of finding any soft tissue in this bone that was thoroughly exposed via the blood vessels to the environment were very low. And so, but I did bring it back to the lab. At the time, I was at California State University, Northridge. I was running $1 million microscopy laboratory there, and everybody was thrilled with me. You know, the students were doing great. All the professors liked me. And so I did this work on the horn, and I found not only the osteocytes, which are the cells that manufacture and maintain bone, but I found large sheets of stretchy tissue that is the pre-hardened bone sheets. In other words, before sheets of bone are made inside the bone, a collagen carpet is laid down. And then these osteocytes, these amazing cells, run around and impregnate it with all the bone mineral, and then it becomes hard. And so this was prior to them having the chance to put all this bone mineral in these sheets. And so these were soft, stretchy sheets of fiber or bone, which was astounding to me. Mm-hmm. And so so I published my results in an international journal, Acta Histochemica, which incidentally had published back in the 60s the work of Roman Pawlicki from Poland on soft dinosaur tissue. So this has been in the open scientific literature since the 60s, and yet it's been largely ignored because it's problematic for folks who had adhere to deep time and long Earth ages. And so I published it, and many people in the department were very excited. They wrote it up in the biology department newsletter, and but then some of the students started getting very excited, and they asked me, "Well, what does this mean?" And I said, "Well, it means they can't be old. I mean, this stuff doesn't just sit there and under the freeze thaw cycle of Montana for 68 million years and retain any of its original conformation. It should be completely decayed by now." And a couple of professors didn't like that, and so they mounted what was called by my immediate supervisor a witch hunt against me, and they fashioned a way whereby I could be thrown out of the university, and so I was summarily terminated. Hmm. Now we have since filed a lawsuit against the university, and I wish I could comment on it. I can say that it's going in a positive direction, which is good. But that's about all I can say about it.
Don, I want to include Don in our conversation here, too. Don, you're pretty familiar with the scientific method. Do you see anything that would raise an eyebrow or alert you to bad science and what you've just heard described?
Well, no, and I've heard Mark speak before, and I've mm-hmm. Read some of his material, and from what I can see, it is certainly you know, well founded in the microscopy techniques of today, and even when I was going to school some time back. But so from the discoveries, I mean, it sounds very, very sound.
Okay. Well, Mark, your report of your discovery was received with, what, ho-hum, I guess I could say, no small amount of ridicule. Has anybody anywhere taken issue with your science, your procedures, your methods, your documentation?
Well, people have commented largely on the blogs, and there's a lot of blogs. All you have to do is Google Armitage Triceratops or Armitage Sea Suns, California State University, Northridge, and about, I don't know how many pages now, about 80,000 pages come up. So this has received no small amount of attention. But the scientists who know what I've done, particularly Mary Schweitzer, have commented that that my paper was fine. It was a morphology paper. It showed through strict science that these cells are there, these tissues are there. But the only conclusion that I drew in the paper was, hey, this is interesting and we need to study it, which is true. I mean, I remember my major professor in college, Dr. Richard Lumsden, who was dean of the graduate school at Tulane University. You know, he had that New Orleans accent,
yeah.
And he would say, my boy, don't be afraid of where your science takes you. Mm-hmm. And boy, my science has taken me down a pretty exciting road here. But, you know, all I did was publish science. But you read the blogs and you read the comments and people are saying, well, he obviously falsified his data and he obviously had an agenda and he put religion in his paper. And my question is, have you even read the paper? Because the paper is a strict vanilla, plain Jane scientific paper. It makes no conclusions about the age of the Earth or the age of the dinosaurs or religion for that matter. And so it's sad that people feel free to make these kind of comments without really doing their homework and really reading the facts that are there in the literature.
There is a whole lot of emotion in this whole dialogue, and I've read much of it online, and it's disappointing is what it is. I'm still waiting for some scientific criticism. What became of Dr. Schweitzer's work?
Well, she's still at NC State University, I believe, and she did follow up her groundbreaking and really really phenomenal papers. The original work that she did on soft tissue.
Now she found some herself too, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. Mm-hmm. She found it in a T-Rex femur, and she's gone on to discover it in plenty of other dinosaurs and even extinct turtles. She's found, in fact, some of the most beautiful cells that she found came out of extinct turtles, which were fossilized in the ground. And they're soft. These cells are soft. And osteocytes, they're really cool cells. I mean, they cannot be mistaken with any other cell. Any person, any microscopist who's done any vertebrate study and they've looked at the cells within bone recognize osteocytes instantly. So they're a diagnostic cell. When you see them, you know that you are looking at bone tissue. They cannot be mistaken for any other cell in the vertebrate body. And so, let's see, what was your question? I lost my train of thought.
I'm just wondering what became of her work and her reputation. Yes. Did she suffer some of the same ridicule that you have?
Well, I think that, and I have to surmise that some serious pressure was placed on her by the evolutionary community. But she did a study last year, which was a very interesting study. She collected the blood from chickens and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, emu. And she pooled this blood together and she spun it down. In other words, she put it in a centrifuge and took all the cells out. She separated the cells. She got the red blood cells separated from everything else. So you know, without any of the serum, without any of the proteins that cause blood coagulation, or any other proteins found in the blood, she isolated the red blood cells, and she lysed those. That's the term to break them open, and she released the iron in the blood, the heme compound. And then she soaked some tissues from these chickens and also some dinosaurs in this blood solution for a couple of years on a laboratory bench, you know, in an air-conditioned laboratory far from the conditions at the Hell Creek Formation. And then she examined some of the tissues microscopically, including some of the dinosaur bone cells, the osteocytes, and she found little iron fillings sort of associated with the cell barrier, the cell walls, the plasma membrane and such. And so the contention is that iron, these iron fillings, these iron components have the ability to act like a fixative, like formalin. We use formalin, formaldehyde, you've heard of, and actually fix the cells. But the problem is a microscopist is, you know, after 30 years of studying the protocols for microscopy, there's no iron fixation protocol in the manuals. And if it was an effective method, we would certainly latch onto it and use it as microscopists, but we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are problems with her paper, because the bone tissues that are encapsulated in these, you know, highly mineralized bones, they're sequestered from blood. In fact, the only way to get blood metabolites, the nutrients, the oxygen needed for these cells to stay alive, is to put them in solution, and then they travel through these tiny little openings called canaliculi that are orders of magnitude smaller than red blood cells are. They're so much smaller, a red blood cell could never fit in there. So the blood never comes in contact with bone tissue. Mm-hmm. And so even if the dinosaur died and all the blood spilled out and laid around on the bones, it can't penetrate the bones. It can't get in to preserve these cells. So her explanation, as it were, for the preservation of bone tissues is inadequate.
Don, do you have any experience with iron as a fixative? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, no, I don't. I'm not a microscopist, and okay. haven't really been in that field other than the microbiology, you know, that I took when I was in undergraduate and graduate school. It sounds like this gal is really trying to stretch the issue here of. Okay, how could these cells be preserved all this time if they're millions and millions of years old? And, of course, the answer to that is they're not preserved for that period of time, as Mark has stated so clearly, repeatedly. And that really is the issue. We're searching for an explanation that really doesn't... isn't viable with the evidence that we see.
Well, it seems that Mark's work suggests one of at least two possibilities. One is that dinosaurs are not in fact 65 million years old, but much younger, or that soft tissue somehow can last for that length of time. Do we know for a fact, are we absolutely convinced that soft tissue cannot hang around for 65 million years? And your description, Mark, of the way this Triceratops horn was found exposed to the air is pretty compelling.
Yeah, no, we know of no mechanisms that would preserve tissue for that long. In fact, you know, I've made a couple of predictions and a couple of suggestions. I've suggested that people go dig up their pet dog or cat that they buried in the yard 10 years ago and see if there's any soft tissue in it. And I dare say they probably wouldn't find any. Maybe some encapsulated in the bones like these are, but we know intuitively that these kind of tissues don't stay around for long periods of time, particularly when they're exposed to mud and water and all the microorganisms that are associated with that and insects. And we found rodent DNA. So, I mean, there's all kinds of plant DNA, fungal DNA. So there's all kinds of organisms trying to get at. In fact, I've got some beautiful pictures of some of these osteocyte cells with a fungal hyphae, a strand, running right past it. And so, you know, it's all, and I've gotten a little trouble for using the N word, the M word, the miraculous word. Yeah. To me, it's miraculous that these tissues are there, and they look, some of these cells look alive. In fact, when I presented my findings at the Microscopy Society of America meeting in Hartford, Connecticut last summer, I had PhDs come up to me and say, these cells look so alive, we should try to culture them. Now that's a PhD who understands what cells look like, and they looked at these and they made the conclusion that these look alive and maybe they can be cultured and grown in a laboratory. I mean, that's how alive these cells look. So to have this kind of preservation, and we're talking about structure that is so small. You know, human hair is 100 microns wide, and 1 micron is 1,000 nanometers, and I'm photographing structures that are 200 nanometers.
Yeah, my goodness.
In size. And so how can this level of preservation be there, even if they're 6,000 years old? I mean, that's my problem as a microscopist. We're taught to process tissues on ice to keep them cold while we're fixing them and dehydrating them and doing all the things we do, because these structures break down so quickly. And so, you know, for them to be present in the record there in Montana and elsewhere, my prediction is that we're going to find this all over the world.
Well, here's kind of an odd question, but if they can be preserved for 6,000 years, Why not 600,000 or 60 million?
Well, we know the half-life of DNA is about 500 years.
Ah, okay.
And so these tissues break down very quickly. I mean, collagen is one of the more, one of the more robust structures in tissue. And so it seems to last the longest, but these cells with their very delicate membranes, all the membranes inside the cells that encapsulate these little organelles. You know, we have organs, cells have organelles. They break down very quickly. And as a microscopist, as an electron microscopist, that structure goes away if you don't process you go from a living organism to the microscope in about a week or less. And if you don't process them properly, your structure's not there.
Well, is the fact that you had partial fossilization in your sample in your Triceratops horn, is there any way of explaining and saying, oh well, it's partially fossilized and that is the fixative agent? Samples, these dinosaurs have obviously been exposed to water and a lot of mud. And which, of course, points to the flood, as we, as us creationists would obviously say. Well, okay, the reasons why you have so many dinosaurs in this area is because that's where the flood had deposited them. But be that as it may, and obviously you need to have water in order to get fossilization. Is that a possible explanation? Is because, okay, well, partial fossilization has taken place and that's kind of fixed everything in place.
Well, there certainly exists in the fossil record, and it's been well documented in the literature. A gentleman by the name of Bill Schaff from UCLA has documented beautifully the fossil preservation of single-celled organisms. But they're hard. They've been hardened. And so these tissues that we're talking about, particularly in the Triceratops horn and elsewhere, the discoveries that they found are stretchy. And so they're not hardened. They haven't been permineralized. There has not been a mineral replacement, a substitution of mineral atoms with biologic atoms. And so they're still stretchy. And so even though there was partial, what we call selective permineralization in the horn, in other words, the vessels were hardened because those solutions traveled up in them, everything on the other side of the vessels, all the tissue that surrounds the vessels and all the tissues that were turning into hard bone that were encapsulated by the bone mineral were untouched. And so those didn't permineralize, and yet they didn't decay. And so that's what's compelling, is that we have this level of preservation of soft tissues, of cells that look alive, that has certainly been around here for as long as, long ago as the flood was here, which is, 4,000 years, I guess. I'm not a theologian, so I don't know those numbers. But the level of preservation in soft tissues is astounding. That's the problem. That has to be explained by people who believe in long ages.
And hasn't some biochemistry been done? I mean, the protein analysis or DNA analysis of some of this tissue to say that, we've got proteins here. Obviously, you've got collagen, but other than collagen, some of the membrane proteins, for example, or some DNA, if not complete DNA strands, at least partial DNA strands, that would say, yes, this is an osteocyte DNA or some other cell DNA that is part of this particular animal that we're examining.
Exactly. That's what was so astounding by Mary's work. She really did her work carefully, and because the initial objections to her findings were, well, it's contamination. Now this is absurd on its face, because you're imagining that modern osteocytes, let's say from a bird that was flying across over the Triceratops horn in Montana, crashed into the cliff and happened to break a wing bone or something, and the osteocytes in the wing bone crawled out and crawled across the matrix or the mud, the dirt, and crawled into the triceratops horn, and then you know, all the osteocytes are lined up in parallel with each other, so they went in and they adopted that conformation perfectly. And not only did they do that, but they all connected with these tiny little filipodia, these little connections that they have. So to cry contamination is absurd on its face, because all of that, all of those miraculous steps have to take place with modern osteocytes, and we know that's just impossible. But the other claim was that these are biofilms. These are the remains of bacteria that were present 68 million years ago, and they consumed the tissues that were there. And then what they leave, they make a biofilm, sort of a sugary, soupy, gel-like layer that they inhabit to protect themselves while they're consuming this soft tissue. But then it begs the question. Okay, the soft tissue didn't last 68 million years, but this soft biofilm has to last 68 million years. So that's no answer for them. And then what Mary did is she used immunohistochemistry. She used the antibody-antigen complex reaction, which we mm-hmm. understand very well, to tag certain molecules in the cells, to tag them using sort of Lego block, you know, biochemistry. She had a dye that glows a particular color when you hit it with a particular color, and they use laser microscopes to do this. And so the laser puts out, you know, one wavelength of light, and if that dye has been taken up by anything in the cell, it glows like a lighthouse. And so that's what she did. And what she found, she didn't find DNA, but she found histones. And histones are the proteins mm-hmm. that wrap DNA. And so, right. you know, the DNA molecule is very, very long. And in order to fit it inside the nucleus of a cell, actually the nucleolus of the cell, you have to wrap it and wrap it and wrap it and wrap it and wrap it. And so that's what the histones do. So she found histones. And then she found actin and tubulin. Those are two other proteins that manufacture the cytoskeleton or the roadways inside the cell. And so because of the immune complex reactions, she was able to show that these were original molecules. They couldn't have been any contamination or anything else, and so she nailed that coffin shut.
Right, and that was inside the osteocytes, for example, that exactly. You know, she was looking at. So there's no doubt that we still have major bio, you know, macrobio biomolecules within yes. these cells. You know, it does baffle the mind how anyone could think that these are 60 million plus years old, you know, or 50 million or whatever. I mean, they've got to be, you know, no older than 1,000, you know, several thousand years old, as would be evidenced, obviously, from the biblical flood model.
No. I think it's interesting that we would look at Mary Schweitzer's assumptions and call them miracles. It'd have to be miracles for that to happen.
Yeah, she does not abandon deep time. And I, yeah. when I first lost my job, I was out on the talking circuit, and my title of my talk was, "Why does Mary Schweitzer get to keep her job and I don't?" And the reason is because, you know, I'm a young earth creationist. I believe the Bible. I don't question the Bible. I mean, I used to question the Bible as an evolutionist, but I don't question it anymore, because my science backs up perfectly what the scriptures teach about creation, how long we've been here, and where we're headed. And that's the important thing, is where
now,
we're headed.
You're in the process of putting together another expedition, another foray up to the Hell Creek Formation. Will discoveries of additional soft tissue discoveries help your case?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, it's not my case that's of interest to me, because this is not about me. None of this is about me. It's really about the Lord. It's about God. It's about His Word. And it's about teaching people the truth, because they're being lied to. I mean, the young people in this country walking across college campuses, staring at their little screens while they push buttons, I mean, they're being lied to about the age of the earth. And if you get Genesis wrong, I mean, Genesis is the foundation for the whole rest of the Bible. I mean, the cross of Christ and His sacrifice on the cross for us, for me, becomes meaningless if you have millions of years before Adam and Eve and sin entering the world? And so that's the crux of the matter, is the Bible really believable? And my contention is yes. Yes, it is. And my goal is to teach these millennials that they're being lied to, and that the truth is that the earth is young. But so it's not about my case so much as it is about the case for creation. But yes, we have a trip planned. In fact, we had to postpone it because we had a little difficulty raising funds. But we do have now a crowdfunding website, which has started off very well. But we were going to go in May, a couple weeks from now, because they found a juvenile T-Rex for us there. And, you know, what's not to love about a baby T-Rex, right?
You just want to go hug him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, but my hope is it will find soft tissues in these remains as well, and hopefully get that published. In fact, I have two papers in press right now, which I'm hoping will get published. But we think that if we find soft tissues in a baby T-Rex, that should be pretty groundbreaking, and hopefully we'll get that published as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, on our Broken Road Radio website, there is now a link, a little graphic over to the right of the side of the homepage, where you can click on it. It says, "Help Mark Armitage Soft Dinosaur Cell Project." It'll take you to the GoFundMe site, and there's a great video there where Mark teaches about what he has found and what he's discovered and what he has planned, including a budget down to the details of what he needs to make this work and get back to the Hell Creek Formation. What's the duration of your fundraising campaign? Is it going to be around for a few weeks yet?
Yes. I'm sure that, we're asking for $102,000 because mm-hmm. there's equipment that we need, the electron microscopes. I'm competing with laboratories that have brand new $500,000 electron microscopes, and my scanning electron microscope is about 30 years old, and my transmission electron microscope is about 50 years old, and so they're great instruments. I'm pretty sure that they'll work well for another 10 to 15 years, but I need service contracts. That's the problem. These things are persnickety, and they get the older they get. They're like a seasoned racehorse, and they need a lot of attention. So we'd like to get some service contracts on these. And bear in mind that we're not asking for any salary money. We have a tent-making business. We go out and sell and service microscopes around Southern California, and we do have an eBay store that sells microscopes. And it's been rough lately because of this wonderful economy that we're in. But, our needs are being met, so God is good. But, yes, if folks could go to the GoFundMe website and help out, and particularly pass it on, we want as many people across the planet to see this and watch that video and see what we're trying to do as possible. Because, again, it's about winning souls to Christ. That's what this is really all about.
And again, there is a link. You'll see it off to the right-hand side of our homepage, and I'm scanning back here on our chat window. The actual web address is, you could go to GoFundMe.com and search for Soft Dinosaur Cell Project and find it. And if I read you this whole link, it would just be gibberish on the radio. But one click on that link on our page will get you there. You'll be able to see that whole video. It's about that's a 20-minute video, Mark.
Yeah, it's a long video, but it's already been viewed. It's only been up since, I think, the 27th or 28th of April, mm-hmm. and it's been viewed 110 times or so. And so we're very grateful for that. And, if nothing else, if people watch the video and it changes their perspective and makes them think a little more about Scripture and not questioning it, because isn't that the first sin in the Bible? I mean, I ask people, what is the first sin in the Bible? And people will say, well, they ate the fruit. And that's really not the first sin in the Bible. The first sin in the Bible was Satan asking the question of Eve, did God really say? Mm-hmm. And we fall into that trap. We start questioning the Bible because it doesn't fit with our training that we've received as scientists, or the indoctrination that we've received as non-scientists, that the earth is millions and billions of years old. God did say clearly that he made the earth in 6 days. In fact, he reiterates it in Exodus 20:11 with his finger in stone on the very tablets of stone. For in 6 days the Lord created the heavens and the earth and all that is in them. So that's in the middle of the Ten Commandments. So if nothing else, folks, if all you can do is follow the Ten Commandments, then follow Exodus 20:11 and don't question that God made everything in 6 days.
And I think it's pretty basic to the whole issue that even the hint that soft tissue could exist, could still be found in dinosaur bones, should prompt science itself, the whole body of science, to dive into this and find out.
You know, my dream is to have a dinosaur soft tissue research institute. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a $50 million enterprise. But, you know, just join up, people, and let's make this institute. And you can put me down in the basement with the microscopes, and everybody else can run the institute. Just leave me in the lab. I'll just be the lab rat down there working on this stuff. But, yeah, no, I mean, that's why I made the prediction, because, of course, Bill Nye stood in front of Ken Ham in that well-televised, well-publicized debate and said the problem with creationists is they don't make predictions. And so I'm making a prediction that soft tissue in the dinosaur record is the norm rather than the exception. And so my goal is to go out and go to as many digs as possible and see if my prediction is correct or not. And folks can answer that prediction if they wish to, or ignore it. It's really up to them.
And again,
have any other scientists jumped on that bandwagon yet? Have they taken that challenge, or have they, you know, and Mary Schweitzer has done something like that, but are there any new scientists or scientists now that have been, you know, kind of teased into the notion that they can find some soft tissue?
None that I've seen by reading the literature, and no one has contacted me directly. In fact, it's really easy to contact me. I think if you just Google my name, my contact information will come up. But my email address is really easy, micro, because I like microscopes, micromark, because my name is Mark. So micromark@juno.com, and I answer all emails. And so, no, not that I know of. I don't think anybody's taken up the challenge. But I would encourage other laboratories to jump in and let's explore this thing. Let's see how far, I mean, let's not be afraid of where our science takes us, and let's see how far this soft tissue goes in the fossil record. And they found stuff much older. I mean, a recent paper that I saw, I think they were saying 200 million year old organisms with soft tissue. So maybe the problem is the age that we're ascribing to these things. Maybe they're not 200 million years old.
Maybe there's been a lack of response because there's a plentitude of fear out there as to the repercussions.
Well, yes, but the fear. Why do people have this fear? Because their pet theory might be answered in the negative by real science. But I think the fear goes beyond that. I think the real fear is that people are afraid to bow their knee and their heart to the Lord. And look. It took me a while. I was an evolutionist, fully steeped in evolution. And when I became a Christian, I dragged my science and my evolution into Christianity with me. And so it was a hard road for a while. But when I finally surrendered and I said, okay, Lord, I'm just going to ignore what I've been taught, what I've been indoctrinated in, and I'm going to study the real science that supports your word, and I'm going to study your word. I mean, everything changed for me. It my trust level grew exponentially, and I tell you, it's been a great ride. I'm not the richest person in Southern California, but in my heart, I have riches that no one can compare to because I know I'm saved. I know that when the calamity comes, and boy, aren't we seeing the birth pangs of the calamity?
It sure seems that way. It sure does.
So when it comes down, I know that I'm saved, and I know that God is preparing a place for me on the other side. I'm an eternal being. I wasn't created just to be here for a short speck of time and then dissolve into stardust. I mean, that's ridiculous. We're eternal beings. That's why we have this yearning inside of us for a message that's greater than everything we're seeing around us. And so my encouragement to you is talk to the Lord. Be honest with him. Mm-hmm. Tell him, you know, I'm a sinner, God. I need you. I need what you did on the cross. I get emotional when I talk about this because it's so meaningful to me. But it's so easy. A little child can do this. And so that's my encouragement to you. If you're struggling today with where you're at and, you know, is the earth old, is the earth young, just talk to God. Just open a dialogue and talk to him, and he will answer your prayer. I guarantee you.
Amen. One more question, Mark. As a microscope, I have to know, do you have names for your microscopes? Just thought I'd ask.
That's a great idea. I think I'll have to work on that. Next time you have me on, I'll give you all the names that I've named for them.
And we'd like to do that again soon. Let's see what we can do to rustle up some help here for this next expedition to the Hill Creek Formation for you. And again, if you're so inclined to help, there's a link on the Broken Road website. Makes it really very easy. Mark, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it a whole lot.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And God bless you guys.
Dr. Don, thank you for your help today.
Oh, you're quite welcome. Yeah. It was a pleasure. It's always a pleasure listening to Mark and finding out more about what he's up to.
And we'll talk to Mark again soon. And Don, I'm not sure. I have to ask you about tomorrow, if you're available tomorrow. That's your normal time with us here.
Well, I could be.
Have we used up our quota for this week? I don't know.
Oh, we only get so much Don per week, right?
Yeah, I think so. Again, thanks for being with us. Great discussion. The podcast of this whole conversation will be up on our website in about an hour or so. So you'll be free to download it and listen to it or share it, if you will. And we hope you do exactly that. Again, Mark, take good care of yourself and best of luck with this new expedition.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.